Hari ho sahana bhavatu sahana bhunaktu sahaveyam karabhavahai tejasvina
When Krishna Pandit learned of his guest's lone struggles to produce Back to Godhead, he volunteered to help with some of the business aspects of the publication. Bhaktivedanta Swami was indeed gratified by Krishna Pandit's sincere help, and in appreciation, he gave him an addition to his name, Hari Bhaktanu Das, one who serves the Lord's devotees. After 6 months in Chippewada, Bhaktivedanta Swami wrote an appreciation in the temple's guest book. From the appreciation, I am pleased to write herein that I have come to Delhi from my headquarters, 1/859 Keshigat, Vrindavan, UP, purely on spiritual mission to propagate the cult of devotional service of the Lord. And I am more pleased to mention herewith that Sriman Sri Krishna Sharma, Hari Bhaktanu Dasa, has provided me a suitable room for my literary activities. I am publishing an English fortnightly magazine of the name Back to Godhead from this place and the Nawal Prem Shabha, of which Sri Krishnaji is the honorary secretary, is arranging for my daily lectures on Srimad Bhagavat. Late Pandit Jyoti Prasad Sharma, father of Sri Krishnaji, was also known to me, and during his lifetime, whenever I used to come to Delhi, late Pandit Jyoti Prasadji would provide me with residential place. His good son is also following in the footprints of his noble father, and as secretary of the Nawal Prem Shabha, he is doing good service in propagating Ram Nam all over the city. In neat English script, Bhaktivedanta Swami went on to write that, in his opinion, temples should be used solely for educating the public in spiritual values, and that it was his personal mission to organize temples for that service. From the letter, temples are not meant for ordinary householders engaged simply in the matters of animal propensities. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Lord deity, the predominator of the temple, can only be allowed to remain in the temple, otherwise not. Trying to compose Srimad Bhagavatam at Chippewada, while surrounded by sometimes noisy families with their non-devotional domestic habits, had impressed upon him the importance of not using a temple as an apartment house. Despite his plans to settle down and begin the monumental task of translating Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhaktivedanta Swami was ready to preach in other ways also. In October of 1959, he encouraged a news article in the Times of India. Two American scientists had received the Nobel Prize in Physics for discovering the antiproton, quote, according to one of the fundamental assumptions of the new theory, the article read, there may exist another world or an anti-world built up of antimatter. The other world reminded Bhaktivedanta Swami of the eternal spiritual world described in Bhagavad Gita. He was well aware that the scientists were not speaking of antimaterial in the sense of eternal or spiritual. But he thought of using their scientific terms to capture the interest of scientific-minded people. He conceived of an essay presenting the theistic science of Bhagavad Gita in terms of the antimaterial particle and the antimaterial world. It was a time when the whole world was talking of space travel. Indian news media had reported the Russian Sputnik 2 years ago, and the race for space had begun. What's a Sputnik?
Satellite.
It's a satellite.
It's a Russian word for satellite.
Yeah, but I think it was round.
It was more like a, like a cylinder, but it had like a rounded part.
Okay.
It's made out of like few of them.
Okay. Many rounded parts that it had little pokey things on it or stuff, little antennas and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So the Russians were the first in space. Seizing on the current interest in space travel, Bhaktivedanta Swami described how, by Bhakti Yoga, the soul can travel past the farthest reaches of space to the eternal planets of the spiritual world, where life is blissful and full of knowledge. He gave his own fresh translations of Bhagavad Gita verses, couched in the language of the new physics. With his antimaterial particle and antimaterial world, the complete work, Easy Journey to Other Planets, was a 15,000-word manuscript, and he showed it to Hitsaran Sharma of Radha Press, but he didn't have enough money to get the little book printed. In February of 1960, Bhaktivedanta Swami decided to print it himself in two installments of Back to Godhead. The articles drew an immediate response from a physicist at the Gujarat University in Ahmedabad, Mr. Y.G. Naik, who received Back to Godhead through the mail. Dr. Naik thought Bhaktivedanta Swami's application of the antimaterial principle was, quote, really a grand one. This is no doubt a classic essay. Dr. Naik was interested in further discussions on physics and transcendental knowledge, and Bhaktivedanta Swami replied with equal enthusiasm, finally asking the physicist to join him in distributing the cultural heritage of India to the whole world. Convinced that such an essay had great potential to interest educated English-speaking readers, Bhaktivedanta Swami worked hard to raise enough donations to print Easy Journey to Other Planets as a paperback book. He finally did so in the fall of 1960. A foreword by Dr. N.K. Siddhanta, Vice Chancellor of the University of Delhi, arrived late but was included in the book as an insert. Okay, so this must be from the foreword. While everyone may gain from it, the student community in particular is recommended to read the book with care and practice bhakti yoga, which will help to strengthen the mind and build up character. I shall be glad to see this work read by the students and teachers alike. Several Indian scientists and scholars contributed reviews, noting the book's scientific come spiritual vision and, quote, the method of speeding over space, not by mechanical acceleration of speed, but through psychological effort and spiritual emancipation, end quote. It was only 38 pages, but it was first publication aside from the one-page folded newspaper, Back to Godhead. He tried to distribute the little book effectively. He gave one copy to Dr. P. Banerjee of the National Museum of New Delhi. Dr. Banerjee. He used to come to the library and consult some books, and I met him there. He gave me a book called Easy Journey to Other Planets. He gave me some copies to distribute for a rupee or half a rupee each. I felt attracted to him. I thought he was a saintly person with pure devotion and without any outward glamour. He was not out to attract people just for name and fame. He had little support from anyone. He was living alone in a small room in Chippewada. He was devoted to his studies. So I asked him, "Sir, if you have time and you don't mind coming to my house, could you kindly come on Sundays and recite the Bhagavad in my house?" He readily agreed. He was a great scholar. He was learned in the scriptures, and he was fond of communicating his ideas to others. He was a good speaker and a good conversationalist. He was very polite. Right, so it means he can give lectures nicely, but he's also good at conversation, because that people are very comfortable in all that with you. You know, so you can speak nicely, they're comfortable with that. Then when you speak the philosophy, they're also, you know, be emotionally more inclined to be enthusiastic like that. So it's always a good, it's one of the 64 arts, the art of conversation. Right. Strangely enough, conversation is below, 100 decibels like that, so that would mean, you know what I'm saying? That doesn't mean sitting at the pumps and shouting at each other from 3 feet away. That's not exactly conversation. Continuing from Dr. Banerjee. Whatever he said very distinctly. He spoke in Bengali and explained the essence of the verses. Sometimes he also referred to the commentaries, just to give me more information. The others were not very much interested in commentary or in difficult aspects. But because he knew that I had some studies in the field, he explained the commentaries for my sake, and for the sake of one or two other gentlemen who were also very elderly and very scholarly. The gatherings at my home would be attended by about 20 or 30 people, and he would continue his explanation for 1 or 2 hours. Then he would recite the Hare Krishna mantra, and he would also take part with the kartals and harmonium. So it was a very enjoyable gathering, because he made the difficult things very easy, and he explained everything to all of us according to our needs. He knew that this much is for this person, and this much is intended for this man, this much for the others. After the meetings, he used to take a little rest in my house. I requested him to take meals in my house, but he said he did not take meals prepared by others. But when he met my wife and she said she would be happy to prepare the meals, he said, "All right, I will take." And she used to prepare meals on Sundays when he would come. He sometimes asked me how to get more and more people attracted towards this field. But as a government worker, I could not persuade anyone very openly, nor had I the time to organize anything on a big scale for him. But he was not satisfied with that. He asked me if I could organize on a bigger scale. He knew that the people who attended the meeting at my house were very old, 70, 80, one was 90 years of age, retired, 90 years of age. They were old, retired, educated persons. It lasted for no less than a year. After that, he said he would be trying to go out to other places. He asked me to continue the gatherings, but I said, "I am not initiated." He said I could continue anyway, because I was born as a Brahmin. He gave me the authority to continue for some time, but I could not continue, because I used to go out. I lost all interest after he left. I was a government servant. Easy journey to other planets had been like a warm-up for his real work of presenting Srimad Bhagavatam, but now he was even more convinced of the need for books. To preach, you would have to have books, especially if you were to go to the West. With books, he could create a spiritual revolution. There was so much literature in the West, but Westerners had nothing like this, nothing to fill their spiritual vacuum. Although he wanted to give as much time as possible to Srimad Bhagavatam, he decided to continue with Back to Godhead by using excerpts from already existing book manuscripts as articles. Occasionally, however, he would write and print a new article in Relevant Inquiries. In relevant inquiries, he wrote, "We are just trying to make a humble attempt to save the human being by propaganda of Back to Godhead. This propaganda is not fictitious. If there is any reality at all, this propaganda of Back to Godhead is the beginning of that era of reality." In the article, A Godless Civilization, Bhaktivedanta Swami referred to Prime Minister Nehru's complaints about the misuse of public funds in the name of religion. Bhaktivedanta Swami noted that although there were undoubtedly instances in which religious leaders were implicated in criminal offenses, if statistics were compared, the religious cheaters would be outnumbered by the political cheaters. Although Pandit Nehru had been right in warning of religious fraud, the warning could not be effective without a thorough reform of spiritual institutions, and that reform could be accomplished only with the cooperation of government leaders. Bhaktivedanta Swami quoted from his letter, in which he had asked Prime Minister Nehru to take up the study of Bhagavad Gita, but as he informed his Back to Godhead readers, Pandit Nehru had never replied because of his lack of spiritual knowledge. He thought that this institution, the League of Devotees, might be something like the so many mats and temples which have become the source of headache for the pandit. Bhaktivedanta Swami charged that Pandit Nehru thought that any spiritual organization is, quote, a dungeon for accumulating public funds and then misuse it for questionable purposes, from the article. He, however, approves of the so-called sadhus who do social service and talk nonsense in the spiritual science. This is so because he has no depth of spiritual knowledge for himself. Although he is a Brahmin and pandit, ignorant in spiritual knowledge is the qualification of the Shudras, or the laboring class. In the reverse, ignorance of spiritual knowledge, that's your qualification to be a Shudra. Right? Like that. He requested Pandit Nehru not to be afraid of the word God or Krishna. But we can assure him that there is no such cause of fear, because Krishna is everyone's friend and able to render real help to everyone. Bhaktivedanta Swami ended by suggesting that immoral practices were not confined only to the temples of India, but were common to materialistic civilizations all over the world. In particular, he cited the disturbances amongst the youth that were becoming rampant in the 1960s. From the article, "The best thing will be for the physician to heal himself first, because in godless civilization, while the occupants of the mats and temples have been the cause of headache for the pandit, the same thing under a different label has become the cause of headache for other European and Asian statesmen. The unbridled youngsters of those countries under the name of teddy boys in England, the rebels without cause in America, and the half-strong in Germany, the leather jackets in Sweden, the children of the sun in Japan, and the style boys in the USSR are some of the byproducts of a godless civilization. And that is the root cause of all headache. That requires a thorough treatment." Rebels without cause. Huh? It's the style boys. Huh? Okay. Let's see. At Chippewada, Bhaktivedanta Swami followed much of the same daily schedule as at Kashigat, except that with Krishna Pandit doing some of the secretarial work for Back to Godhead, he was free to devote more hours to Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna Pandit. He used to translate Srimad Bhagavatam before dawn, about 3 a.m. In the beginning, there was no typewriter, but then he arranged a portable typewriter. He would do his daily work and then cook his food himself. I arranged raw materials for his cooking. Sometimes he used to come to my family asking my wife to get some food. Sometimes he would also bathe at 5 or 6 in the afternoon. Every day he was typing, and he himself was reading some Bhagavatam. and he was going down to the temple for darshan. Then he was going outside, sometimes returning at 2 or 4 in the afternoon. Then he was typing and sending the proofs of back to Godhead to a place and checking them. He was doing all this type of work. His main activity was typing many hours a day. Bhaktivedanta Swami worked from a Sanskrit and Bengali Bhagavatam, edited by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and a large book containing the original commentaries of 12 great acharyas. He had a standard format. He made a Roman transliteration of the Sanskrit Devanagari script, then word-for-word English synonyms, an English prose translation, and finally the English purport on that verse. Before writing his own purport, however, he would consult the commentaries of the acharyas, especially Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Jiva Goswami, Vijaya Dwaj Tirtha, and Sridhar Swami. He contemplated the size of the project he was attempting. The Bhagavatam contained 18,000 verses. The first canto's 17 chapters would fill 3 volumes of 400 pages each. And the second canto with 10 chapters would take 2 volumes. Up through the 9th canto, there would be maybe 30 volumes. The 10th canto, containing 90 chapters, would take 20 volumes. There were 12 cantos, and so the total would be at least 60 volumes. He thought he might be able to finish it in 5 to 7 years. If the Lord keeps me physically fit, then in the fulfillment of Srila Prabhupada's work, I will complete this work. He decided to introduce the first volume with a biographical sketch of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, quote, the ideal preacher of the Bhagavatam, end quote. The reader could best appreciate the Bhagavatam by seeing its practical demonstration in the life of Lord Chaitanya. The special feature of Lord Chaitanya's presentation had been his desire that Srimad Bhagavatam, quote, be preached in every nook and corner of the world by everyone who happens to take his birth in India, end quote. What's nook and corner? What's a nook and a corner? No idea. Schnook in a corner? A corner is like that, okay? And a nook? That's also like an out-of-the-way place. So if you say every nook and corner means basically everywhere, everywhere out of the way, anywhere you can find anybody, anything like that. But you have to check first whether you should talk to the schnook in the corner. That's another thing like that. If he's favorable, then you definitely want to preach to him. But if he's not, then you leave him in his corner and check other corners and other nooks, right? But avoid the schnooks, okay? Yes, make sense? Yeah?
What's a schnook?
What's a schnook? I see. He wants to know what a schnook is. What would be a schnook? You know what a schnook is? You don't know what a schnook is. You speak Hebrew, not Yiddish. Yeah? Okay. Schnook. What would be exactly a schnook?
Somebody who ends up standing in the corner.
Someone who ends up standing in the corner? Well, it's a derogatory term, which means it's not a nice person. As such, there's some defect in their personality. So this would mean, yeah, probably they're petty, that you can't trust them so much, you know, like that. You know, they do things that aren't really exactly proper. Yes?
Schmuck.
Schmuck would be more nasty. You know, they would be, a schnook just as, yeah, a schmuck is a real bad guy. You know, it means he really, you know, really upsets you. A schnook just is annoying. You know, like that. You can tolerate him, but that can be annoying like that. Yeah. Yeah, I would say he's kind of like that, but he'd be a little bit almost kind of like a... no, that's just... A nebbish. Right? Means it's not... Nothing special, nothing outstanding, doesn't really do anything, but... You know, he's a little more active than that, but not as active as a schmuck. But you have to distinguish him from a schlemiel and a schlemazel. And a schmo. Yeah, schmo just means he's basically kind of foolish, you know, stupid. Easily like that. But a schlemiel, see, a schlemiel is someone who is walking with the bucket of subji, right? And he trips and drops it, and it goes flying all over the place. That's a schlemiel, right? Now, the schlemazel is the guy that the bucket of subji lands on, right? So the schlemiel always does something wrong, and the schlemazel is someone who something wrong always happens to them. I guess sometime maybe we should learn all the, because some say that the maximum amount of derogatory terms that you could use about people in the Yiddish language. It's definitely, you know, I say. I see. That's an interesting phenomenon here. This bird hasn't come here for weeks. And the day it shows up is the same day that he comes back. So I wonder if there's some connection, but did you bring this bird with you, or...
No.
Are you sure? Because I haven't seen him since the last time we were sitting here. Okay. So you don't know this bird? No? Okay. Okay. Lord Chaitanya had called Srimad Bhagavatam the spotless Purana and had considered the chanting and hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam along with the Hare Krishna mantra to be a complete scientific process for developing pure love of God, right? So hearing the philosophy from Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting Hare Krishna, right? So then that's complete. So that hearing of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees, and then chanting Hare Krishna, doing kirtan in the association of devotees, then that's a complete process, right? And since you're in the association of devotees, of course, then there's taking a prasad, right? It's not a bad thing. Is it a bad thing? No. What do you think? Good or bad?
Good.
Good. And you?
Good.
Good. What's good? What he said, right? Yeah. Okay. Very nice. Yes. He says yes. Working from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, Bhaktivedanta Swami gave a 50-page synopsis of Lord Chaitanya's life and his Samkirtan movement. He described Lord Chaitanya's divine ecstasies, his philosophical confrontations with leading scholars of the day, and his inauguration of the Samkirtan movement, the congregational chanting of the holy name. Bhaktivedanta Swami especially connected Lord Chaitanya's life and teachings to what he saw as the present crucial time in history. Help for humanity in, quote, this momentous hour of need lay in the Vedic literature, and especially in Srimad Bhagavatam. From the introduction. We know that the foreign invaders of India could break down some of the monumental architectural work in India, but they were unable to break up the perfect ideals of human civilization, so far kept hidden within the Sanskrit language of Vedic wisdom. The Sanskrit language had protected the secret for thousands of centuries, but now the secret had to be released to the world. Right? Prabhupada mentioned that in the academics, Sanskrit is the most important subject because it then gives how you say, entrance into the Vedic literatures, because through Sanskrit then you can approach like that. As he approached the first verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhaktivedanta Swami became absorbed in the Bhagavatam's purpose. The verses stressed that the Bhagavatam alone could save society from the evil influences of the age of Kali. Srimad Bhagavatam's recommendation for this age was simply to hear from the pure devotees about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The setting of the Bhagavatam. Yeah, so in this age, then the best thing is just to hear. One hears Srimad Bhagavatam and the association of devotees, and then all the effects of the Kali Yuga can go away. Sometimes devotees are worried that the effects of Kali Yuga are so great that one can't practice, you know, Krishna consciousness in a very dynamic way. But Prabhupada is here giving the solution from Lord Chaitanya's teaching that you simply have to hear regularly Srimad Bhagavatam. By hearing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and that will get rid of all the problems of Kali Yuga, and then one can practice very easily. Yes? No? Very good. Yeah. What very good?
That one just said.
He speaks. And it was even English. He said, what you just said. Do you understand what I just said? Yeah. Well. Very good. The setting of the Bhagavatam was a gathering of sages at Naimisharanya about 5,000 years ago, at the dawn of the present age of Kali. Foreseeing the degradation of humanity, the sages asked the senior member of the assembly, Suta Goswami, quote, now that Lord Krishna, the shelter of all religious principles, has returned to a spiritual abode, where are religious principles to be found? Sutta's answer was that the epic Srimad Bhagavatam, quote, which is as brilliant as the sun, end quote, was a literary incarnation of God and would give direction to persons lost in the dense darkness of Kali. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva, under the instruction of his spiritual master, Narad Muni, sat down and entered a deep meditation. In trance, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his energies, and the suffering souls of Kali Yuga. He also saw that the remedy for their suffering was pure devotional service. With this vision and the instructions of his spiritual master as his inspiration, Vyasadeva set about to compile Srimad Bhagavatam to give the highest benefit to the suffering souls of Kali Yuga. Okay. So he sees the Lord, he sees his energies, and the suffering souls of Kali Yuga. So then what else would there be? Anything else? No. Yes? Oh, okay, devotees of the Lord. Okay. Sambandhagyan, okay, knowledge about. So basically is that you have the Lord, you have his energies. Yes.
And their relationship.
Okay. The Lord and his energies. Now those living entities who understand or are absorbed in the Lord and his energies, those are the devotees. They have the proper knowledge, proper understanding. But those who don't, then they suffer. Because all there is the Lord and his energies. Right? That's all there is. So someone who understands this, who knows this, they don't suffer. Right? But someone who doesn't know this, then they're an illusion because they think there's something else other than the Lord and his energies. Right? They think there's, you know, they don't understand material nature as one of the Lord's energies. They don't understand how the Lord, through his energies, is making everything work and happen. He's manifesting everything. He's winding everything up. They don't understand. So because of that, then in illusion, then they suffer. So if they properly understand by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, then they get proper knowledge about Krishna and the living entities in the material world. What's their relationship? How to act within that relationship? How to develop love for Krishna? Then, no more suffering. Yes? What do you think? Any idea? Do you know anything what we were talking about? No, see, that's why God had put an ear on each side of your head, right? So you're supposed to listen with those to what's being spoken here. Of course, you and your friend can make all kinds of nice faces and joke, all that. But the problem is the ears are supposed to be catching what we're saying here. Yeah, that makes sense? Okay. Gopal Bhatt. You know Gopal Bhatt? Right? He started off as the, what do you call that? Court jester for the king, Krishna Devarai, here in Krishnagar, the Krishnagar king. But eventually became the prime minister. So, because he was, you know, the court jester and that, then the king used to, you know, joke with him. Because the jester means he can make jokes about the king, but it also means the king, he makes all kinds of jokes about the jester. Right? But he can make whatever he likes, but the jester, if he makes a joke about the king, it better be good, it better be clever, it better be smart, right? So a jester, even though he's the fool, he has to actually be the smartest person in the court, right? Otherwise, then, you know, he loses his head, right? Why will he lose his head? Oh, because the king would get angry and chop it off. It wasn't that he's so foolish he forgot to screw the bolts on or something. His head just fell off or something. No? No? Oh, you're saying he doesn't use bolts. He just uses a screw-on or clip-on head or something like that. So does that mean it's an inflatable? And so if he doesn't clip it on, that might fly away or something like that. So he loses his head because he can't find it because it's stuck on the ceiling and that, you know. No? Okay. So, the king, one day some gentleman came. You know how in Bengal they make all these things out of clay. You know, they make pottery out of clay, different designs and things like that. So one of the famous things is they make all these different shapes, like these horses and people and all these different things. So some man had made, and Krishnagar is very famous for making terracotta things. So he had made some things. You know, he had made three different dolls, you know, of three men and that. And then he brought it to the king as a gift. So after giving it and thanking the man had left, and the king turned to Gopal Bhatt and said, "Now you tell me, which one of these three clay dolls is the most intelligent?" Right? Now how do you tell clay doll, how do you tell which one's intelligent, right? Like that. And so he expects, that will befuddle his his court jester. Right? What's befuddled?
Bewildered?
Bewildered, yes. You know, to means, in other words, to empower him with fuddlement. Right? So that's to befuddle. Yes? Okay. Are you fuddled? No, you're not fuddled. Is he fuddled? Are you fuddled? No. How do you know you're not fuddled? So if you're not fuddled, are you befuddled? Right? You don't know. Yeah. Fuddled means you're confused, right? Which is kind of like what's going on now, right? Befuddled means you're really confused, okay? So does that mean you're a fuddlementalist? Fixed in the principles of fuddlement? Should we have a subject on, you know, fuddology or something like that? He could be our professor. He speaks now, so he could be the professor. Okay, so then Gopal Bhatt then turns to this job of figuring out, you know, which of these clay dolls is the most intelligent. So he goes over the corner, picks up a broom, you know, the coconut broom, breaks off one of the little pieces from there. But he was not going to make pasta la busta. He took that. And he took it over to the first one. And the first one, he stuck the coconut, you know, stick into his ear, and it came out the other ear. Then he went to the second one and put it in his ear, it came out his mouth. And the third one, he went and put it in the ear, and it got stuck. So then he very confidently turned to the king and said, "My dear sire, this third doll, he is the most intelligent. The other two are not very intelligent." The king looks at him and says, "Well, these are clay dolls. What do you mean they're intelligent?" So he says, no, definitely, he's intelligent. So then the king says, "Okay, now you got to explain it. Better be good." Right? So he went back to the first one and he said, "See, this first one, whatever he hears, it goes in one ear and it comes out the other." Right? So therefore, not so smart. Like that. Then he goes to the next one, and he puts it in the ear, it goes out the mouth, and he says, "This one, whatever he hears, he can't, you know, contemplate it. He just immediately has to go and speak and this and that, just go and talk all kinds of gossip and prajalpa. But this third one, whatever, he put the stick going into his ear and stuck. This one, when he hears things, it sticks in his brain. So he's the most intelligent." Right? So then the king was very pleased with his assessment there. Like that? Does everybody understand this process? So now we can understand it. He's the less. Now what happens if it doesn't even go in the ear? It just kind of comes up and bounces off and falls on the ground.
They don't hear?
They don't hear, yes. So that's even, so you have to be more careful. You understand? So when it goes in, it should stick. And then when you're asked, then it should come out the mouth. Okay? If it's not asked, it doesn't come out the mouth. Okay? Yes?
Before on Sunday, you were explaining that Tenai Raman and Krishna and Gopal Bhatt were very great scholars.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that even Akbar couldn't
He couldn't defeat Krishna Devarai, who was the king in South India. They both kings had the same name.
But did Akbar have Birbal with him that time?
He had Birbal, but still, Tenali Ram was more clever. It means Birbal was very intelligent and would do things nice. He was clever, but it was more kind of just, you know, practical religious things. The Gopal Bhatt and Tenali Ram, they were like clever that was beyond. They would just kind of make you laugh and stuff. But they were very sharp. Very, very sharp. Just like I think it was this king had come and he wanted to fight with this other king had come, a Muslim king had come, he wanted to fight with Krishna Devarai, right? And he had this big, huge monster guy. I mean, really big, you know? Very strong, very fierce and ferocious. And all that. And someday in a fight like that, they defeated this other king and they captured this guy. And, you know, and the king wanted to get rid of him. And Tenali Ram said, "No, we should keep him." He says, this man will be very valuable in the future because he attacked the king. He's in this court, right? With all the everybody, he's alone, without weapons. And he tried to attack the king. So the king was very upset, you know. But Tenali Ram said, "No, we should keep this guy." So they gave him an apartment, nice facilities, all kinds of servants, nice food, you know, everything what he'd ever want. And so he was very happy and he'd stay there. You know, oops, sorry. And he would practice his, you know, you know, his martial arts and stuff like that, and just enjoy himself all day. That's what he did. So then at another time, they got attacked by another, even bigger king. And his army was so great that there was no way that Krishnadeva Rai could actually defeat him in battle. So he was very worried, didn't know what to do. So then Tenaliram said, now you bring that man. You bring that big giant, you know. So they brought him and said, here, you have to give this message to the king. Right? So then, you know, they dressed him up like a messenger and everything like that and sent him off to this other king. He was, you know, camped outside with all his forces and all that. So then he went there to the king and read the message, right? But the message was, you know, written in such a way that king would get insulted. And naturally what he does is then he insults the messenger, right? And so then having insulted the messenger, then that big gorilla guy, he got so angry, he just went right up to the king and stabbed him and killed him, right? And then they all killed him, you know, everybody else killed him. But, you know, and then this way, then that whole army and that went back. He was defeated, right? Understand? So this is the brain of Tenaliram, like that. Like this, there's so many stories. All three were very, very intelligent. These two were very clever. Okay. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivarinda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi.